This is PhotoBizX, episode number 564, and today, something a little different. We are talking street photography with a working wedding photographer, a successful wedding photographer based in the UK, and what makes this street photography-based chat business-related is the fact that this wedding photographer has turned his street photography into an income-generating business. And whether or not you are interested in street photography, I'm pretty sure what you hear today will get you thinking about other income streams, other possibilities, other ways to enrich your life and follow your passions. Our special guest is Matt Badenoch, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here, host of the PhotoBizX podcast, where I interview guests from around the world to help you build a better photography business even faster than going it alone. And I know you are going to love today's episode with Matt because I have spent a ton of time with Matt on a fantastic trip to India a few years ago. He is a terrific photographer, always smiling, always happy, willing to share everything he knows that he can to help you succeed. In addition to that, he has a terrific wedding photography business and he's created this side hustle with street photography that I know will get you thinking. Now, before we do jump into the interview, what I'm doing today is something a little different to the usual. If you are a premium member, this will not affect you at all. But if you are listening to the free version of the podcast, I am going to be cutting out the first half of this interview because that part of the interview is when we talk about Matt's wedding photography business and how he brings in his clients successfully, what he would do if inquiries are starting to wane, and how he would attract bookings as quickly as possible if he needed to. So all the business talk around wedding photography is in the first half of this interview. The second half, we dive into the street photography side of things, and I'm leaving that in there for you if you are a free listener in this episode of the podcast. Now, quickly, if you are not a premium member and you would like to hear the full interview today, you can check it all out for as little as $1 with a 30-day trial membership, and there are details about that over at photobizx.com/try.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
Now, before we do get into the interview with Matt, if you didn't catch last week's episode with Julia Cimac, she is an incredibly talented photo editor or retoucher. The reason I asked her onto the podcast was to get an idea of what you should be looking for if you are outsourcing, whether you should outsource to an AI company, whether you should hire an actual human being to do your retouching, whether you should hire a larger company. And Julia helped answer a lot of those questions, well, all of those questions, in fact. And she shared some incredible retouching tips, plus so much more to help you with your photo retouching, your photo editing, and how you can speed the whole process up. So get back and have a listen to that one. Personally, I was blown away by the fact that she has multiple machines running at the same time, editing different photographers' jobs. Her background as a computer programmer definitely came to the fore through last week's interview. So get back and have a listen to that one with Julia Cimac if you haven't heard it yet. I know you'll get a ton from what she had to share. Following the interview with Matt, I'll be back to share a couple of updates about things that are going on. There's a terrific free training series being put together by Shelby Lee that's happening this week. Also, the upcoming AI Masterclass with Brianna Schrader is coming up in a couple of weeks as well. So I'll have more details about those things after the interview with Matt.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
I'm lucky enough to call today's guest not only a friend, but a photography travel buddy. After one of the most epic adventures to India a few years ago with half a dozen photographer friends from the UK. Now, he discovered a love of photography 10 years ago, and he's been a full-time wedding photographer for 7 of the last years. And since then, he's photographed close to 150 weddings in 18 countries across 3 continents. Now, he says on his bio on his website that he's a social introvert, which I have to say totally surprised me after seeing him in action. With a total love of street photography, it was no surprise to see him offering workshops on the topic, firstly in the UK before venturing further afield. Now, I'm not sure if the plan is to make this a pathway to a full-time income or if it's a side gig to help fund world travel and more street photography projects to far-flung places on the map. Either way, I'm looking forward to learning more. I'm talking about the super talented, always smiling Matt Badenoch, and I am rapt to have him with us now. Matt, welcome, mate.
Thanks so much, Andrew. It's so surreal hearing your intro, kind of intro I've heard so many times on your podcast and being on the other side of it. Thanks so much for having me on.
Mate, it's a pleasure. Look, I know that you are super passionate about street photography. You have been for a long time, and I know I've just mentioned you're starting these workshops. Is the plan to make that a full-time gig, or is it a side hustle?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much my dream job. Combining, like, I'm really passionate about photography. I really love street photography. I've also really been into education and even creating experiences for people. I remember my last year of university when I was meant to be finishing my dissertation, and I got bored and I ended up organizing a trip for like 200 students to go to Amsterdam for the weekend. And it's just something I've always really enjoyed. So this is pretty much my dream job. And so it is something I'm hoping down the line to become full income. It's something I want to take kind of slow and steady. I say slow. A lot of people are saying, I've just got back from a workshop in Vietnam and I only launched this like 8 months ago. But it's something I would love to be a big part of my future. I still love doing weddings. I still see myself doing weddings for a good 10 years still. Really enjoy doing them. But it is something I feel like, maybe 10, 20, 30 years, I might not want to be doing that. And so this is potentially my kind of retirement plan, but also it is my dream job. And right now, I'm really loving doing it. And it's been an amazing adventure.
So good. So with the street photography, do you feel it's possible to make a living as a street photographer, or you have to be an educator to make a living from street photography?
That's a very good question, because street photography is really hard to make money off. If you speak to anyone out there, they'll probably tell you the same thing. So most people do it for the passion. And that's what's really lovely about the kind of community is a very passionate community. I often reach out to people on Instagram, people I've never spoken before when I go to other countries, and people are always happy to meet up for a chat, do a bit of a street walk. And I made loads of connections through that. I think there are people out there who have done it a few different ways. Education is certainly one of the ways to do it. There's people who do kind of more tour-based things. There's people who have made good money off. They're just having, extraordinary work. And so through prints, books, they can also become guest speakers. But I think the majority of people out there, it's very rarely a full-time job. It's often kind of maybe, you make some money through some prints. There's some people out there, really good YouTube videos. And I know, through that, you can make some money through ads and sponsorship. But it is notoriously hard. I always say, don't go into street photography. I might make money. For me, it's been a passion for about 10, 12 years now. And it's just also because I have a passion for education that I'm thinking this is what I want to do. But if my goal was I want to make money from photography, I would not be going into street photography to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's exactly how I thought too. I mean, that is what I thought about street photography. It seems to be a very small number of actual photographers making a living from street photography. But if there's these other avenues, we're probably going to hop between street photography and wedding photography because that's what you're doing. But I'm curious, because it is such a passion of yours, just like the podcast is for me, did you find that you have to, or do you find that Karina has to rein you in and say, Matt, you've got to focus on the wedding photography stuff because that's where most of the income comes from?
Yes. Yes. So Karina, by the way, if people don't know, is my wife. We got married a couple of years ago. We've been, I think we met about six years ago. And she's also a wedding photographer. So we met through wedding photography. She had her own wedding photography business, and we still keep those businesses separately. And it's amazing. Yeah, amazing to be able to share that passion with her. And she's also really into street photography. But yes, to answer your question, this has always been a problem for me, even with wedding photography. I always get distracted. And I actually found out I got diagnosed 3 years ago with ADHD, which Karina caught on to. And then I went and got a professional diagnosis. but it explained a lot. But yeah, I've often had a thing of just getting distracted by things that really interest me and the boring stuff leaving behind. So even in my wedding photography business, you know, I sometimes get really into like kind of hyper-focus into like some marketing. I've always enjoyed playing with SEO and shooting and talking with people. But pretty much every year I end up getting fined for submitting my accounts late. Yeah, I often refer to that now looking back to like an ADHD tax. But yeah, street photography is just, I think it's partly been the street photography, which really enjoy, really passionate about, but also just really was really fun setting up and launching a new business and actually a very different business to my wedding business, different audience, different types, very different kind of strategies. And I actually really enjoyed that and really enjoyed diving into that. So yes, I have been bad over the last year of putting the amount of time into my wedding photography business, not the treatment on the clients, not delivering work, but just the mainly the marketing. And my numbers have reflected that as well. So yeah.
Well, you bring up numbers. Give us an idea of the revenue that you're doing with your wedding photography business.
So typically, so I've been going, and I realized with your intro, I really should update that website as well, because it's slightly out. Well, I say slightly, I don't think I've updated about 4 years, but it's, so I've actually been going wedding photography business 10 years now. And I got to my, the numbers, my kind of goal quite quickly within the first year or two. And I've kind of stayed roughly around that. So I did make a note. So yeah, so normally I'm in the 75 to 80K mark. That's British pounds. I don't know what the conversion of that.
That's just over 100. I think it's 101, 102,000 US dollars. It's probably 200,000 Australian dollars because we're so hopeless with our currency.
I mean, that sounds nicer though when you put it like that.
Maybe it's not that much, but yeah. It'll be close to it. So you said, you know, purposely you state that number or around that number, and that's because of your British or your UK VAT, value added tax threshold.
Yes, that's correct. So in the UK, we have a VAT VAT threshold. It's actually just gone up. So it's been for the last like 10 years or so, it's been around £85,000. And it's just gone up literally this month to 90,000, which is kind of well overdue. And if you look at inflation, though, it's still not even close to representing that. But what happens is when you hit that, we then get charged 20% on our revenue. So that's not profit on everything. And that's not things just over, that's everything. So it's a huge increase in your tax just by going over that amount. And so what happens is a lot of small businesses, most wedding photographers I know, will purposely stay under that amount. I've known several people to go over it, and they've kind of said you have to kind of then jump to about 100. So from, you know, 85 to about 110,000 pounds to then start making it worth it and then making more money. And that's a lot of extra work. And I think pretty much everyone I've known who's gone over and tried that for a year or so, apart from maybe one couple I know who are like a husband and wife team, they've all gone back under because they just said it's not worth all the extra work. So I do purposely, yeah, try and stay under that. And one of the ways I do that is I mostly shoot weddings. And most of those are 12-hour days in the UK, but I do shoot often about six or so weddings overseas each year. But what's quite nice is I have the option to do like proposal shoots, which are really busy about Christmas. And because my corporate tax year runs from January to December, if I'm getting to the end of the year and I see action a bit off that mark, I kind of just then accept those and take those on and shoot a bunch of proposals, which are mostly American couples coming over around December. And that's been quite a nice way of, yeah, like just topping that up a little bit if I need to.
Nice, nice. So I know this may be a question for an accountant, but so with you in the UK or your circumstances, can you have your wedding photography income go to 85 or 90,000 UK pounds and then have your street photography business registered as a separate business?
Yes. So that is something that a lot of people have tried within the wedding world to do, even within their wedding business, try and take on extra income. I know some that have tried it, like setting up wedding albums and like stuff as a different business. That doesn't normally fly though, because basically the HMRC, they're the ones who tax us, the government body, they said you need a good reason why this is a separate business outside of like dodging tax. And so it doesn't really work. However, yes, with my street photography work, because it is, I mean, it's a different type of photography, it's a different audience, it's education, it's completely different. I have a different website for it. That is perfectly legit. I haven't separated those businesses yet because that's a lot more admin, but also putting in the time for my street photography business has meant that I am lower on weddings this year. So the income I've got is kind of matching up. Actually, it's slightly lower still at the moment because it's just, in its first year. But when that starts picking up, then I'm going to switch it into a separate business.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. So could I have, again, I don't know if you can answer this question. Can I have a wedding photography business in the UK making close to the VAT threshold and then have a family photography business? Because again, it's a different audience. It could be a different website.
Yeah, so I'm going to caveat that I'm not a lawyer or accountant, but my understanding, and it comes back to you need a reason why the separate business would be yes, especially if you have a different website for it, because then you're seeing this is a separate business, a separate audience. So I think yes, yeah, you would be able to, would be my guess.
I know you added that caveat. Am I going to get a ton of messages saying, Andrew, no way, Matt is wrong, you can't do that?
Potentially, but that's not my problem, son. But the good thing in the UK is if you have an accountant, because you don't have to have an accountant, especially if you're, so we have two business models. You can be a sole trader, which means kind of it runs through your own personal accounts and you can just submit. It's a really easy way of doing it. It's what most photographers do. If you want to set yourself up as a limited company, you do need an accountant. But the good thing, even with a sole trader, is having an accountant is that they kind of approve your thing. So if they've approved it and they're wrong, and again, this is my understanding, I've not been down this road, but my understanding of it is that then they're the ones, you're not liable because you're not the expert in that area. So you just kind of need your accountant to sign off on these things. And that way you don't really, and if you're an accountant, they do, then you don't, I think you're kind of protected. And if they've done something wrong, it turns out then it's not so bad for you. But again, not a lawyer, not an accountant. This is just my understanding.
Let's move away from this topic. What about the state of the wedding industry as a photographer in the UK this year, the last year? How is it looking? Is it healthy? Is it a good business?
So yeah, it's been very turbulent the last few years. And I'm sure this is what I'm going to say now matches a lot of people in different countries. The pandemic, obviously 2020, hell of a year. Things got shut down. I think towards the end of that year, begin 21, we started allowing some weddings, but it was like sometimes limited 10 people. 15 people, and then sometimes they change the rules and it would go into effect that day. So you could have, I think you have a wedding that day and then you've got to move. And, I really feel for couples who are going through this. I had one couple who they had to move five times. They were with me and they changed their date five times. So it was really turbulent. And then I think it was towards the end, second half of 21 and like 22, where things opened up fully. It was then you'd had all these people piling up and then we were like shooting three times the amount of weddings we normally do. And that was fantastic financially. It was mentally exhausting. You kind of go from one extreme to the other. So one part you're very grateful, another part you're just completely out of it and then trying to keep on top of that editing pile as well. And then last year was kind of a bit more back to normality. This year is different. This year is low on bookings for like everyone I've spoken to. That's photographers, that's venues. So this year is not a good year for the industry. What's interesting is though, I mean, me and my wife, I mentioned she's also a wedding photographer, but we really like talking about kind of trends and how things affect different areas. And back in, I think it was, the end of 2020 or 21, we were thinking, looking ahead, like when things open up, how is this, the pandemic, was going to affect the industry moving forward? And one of the things we predicted was that this year was going to be a low year. And the reason for that is that if you looked about how people's relationships were affected during the pandemic, when the first lockdowns got put in place, I think two main things happened is one, you'd had couples that had been going out for maybe 2 months who in normal stages would probably wait another year or two to move in together. But it was either, okay, we either break up or we move in together because of the nature of lockdowns. And so though those relationships got fast-tracked, like I mentioned, I did proposals and most of those are American couples. But when the first lockdowns got lifted, I had so many inquiries to photograph proposals from UK couples. And I heard that from other people and friends. And, this was a lot of relationships, I think, got fast-tracked. You survive the pandemic, you provide the lockdown. Hey, that's, we work, let's get married. And so those people who might have naturally got married around now, they got fast track and got married in the last couple of years. But you also had during that time, a lot of relationships not happening because of the lockdown. And I think when people came out of the lockdown, the first thing on their mind wasn't, okay, I want to settle down and have a long-term relationship. It was more like, actually, I want to go out. I want to travel. I want to go to music festivals. I just want to go out and obviously and have fun. And so those relationships, I think, got delayed. And so those that might be happening now are actually going to be happening a year or two later. And I think those effects are what's kind of led to this year being kind of a lower year. At least that's like my theory on it.
So what do you do then as if it's, I mean, it's, oh, I guess it's better for you because you have this side gig, if you want to call it that, this other business. But if you were only relying on weddings and you said you're notoriously slack with your marketing, what would you do to bring in more clients quickly if you had to?
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Got it. I love it. That's awesome, mate. Let's change tact. I'm going to ask you more about the street photography business that you have, the separate business. When you came up with the idea and you thought, okay, I'm going to start delivering workshops, was that part of the industry or that group of photographers, you know, were they snarky? Were they welcoming? Were they like, who's this Matt dude starting up this street photography workshops? Like, what credibility does he have? Should we even listen to him? And did you have an imposter syndrome going down that road?
And firstly, I have imposter syndrome with everything. That's why I do therapy. To answer the first part of the question, I think it's a lovely community. I think you're always going to have some people in there who can feel that way. I haven't really experienced much of that. But very few people actually do run workshops and do these kind of things. But the few people I have engaged with that have all been lovely, you know, really welcoming, really nice. And of course, most of the industry are just doing it for passion. So they don't care. Like, they either like your stuff, engage with it, or they don't. So I went to last year a street photography festival. You have these, like, it's probably about 8 or 10 of them across the world. And this one was in Rome. That number's probably higher. Those are the ones I'm aware of. But I went to Rome, and it's like a 3-day street photography festival. And it was just so cool meeting other street photographers. People are passionate for it, listening to other speakers. So yeah, I think it's a really nice industry. I should also caveat that, like, when I went to do this, you know, I think, and when you start any new business, one of the first things you should do, and so important, is who is your audience? Ask who's your audience. And, you know, often it can be different. You might have different segments. So, like, for me, I have three main audience types for my street photography workshops. One is the kind of existing market for it, which is mostly retirees who have money because they have the time, they have the money. They want to go off for experiences. Because I should say that most of my workshops are very much focused around the experience. So I do like 1-day ones around the UK. I do 3-day ones around Europe. So I've done Rome, Barcelona, got Lisbon coming up. And then I do week-long ones overseas. So I've just got back from doing one in Vietnam. And then I've also just released for next year, next March, I've got Tokyo and Kathmandu. And those are week-long workshops. And I push people hard. I just, in the one in Vietnam, I had someone on there who, and they were South African. And like all South Africans, they just said things how they saw them, you know, very just, this is what I think. And at the end of the workshop, he said to me, he said, I've done a lot of photography workshop experiences. And he said, this one was the hardest. And I was like, oh dear. And he said, and it was the best I've done.
Nice.
And like, for me, that was amazing. I felt it was incredible. But like, yeah, I do, let's say, push people hard. But I always say, like, you know, if you need a break, go take a break. But what I have planned for you is going to be full on.
So, Matt, so what's an example of pushing someone in a street photography workshop?
We get up early. So I find the one of the best. I mean, we experienced this in India, you know, the time sometimes we would get up like hour. And I say earlier, we get up an hour before sunrise. But it was amazing because two things happen there. One, you've got the changing light, which is really interesting. So when you first get up, it's nighttime. You've got the night lights, you know, it's nighttime kind of shooting. Then you get the blue sky coming up, and then you get the sun coming up. You can play with like kind of silhouettes or whatever. There's so many different things to play with. Then you get the light kind of hitting you. You've got that lovely soft light, that directional light. Then it gets up harsher. And there's just so much to play with. The other thing I find really good about it is one of the big challenges of street photography is people get overwhelmed on the streets. And that doesn't mean just, you know, you can feel overwhelmed, but also it's just hard to see. It's hard to isolate the interest because there's so much going on. And the great thing about starting up early is it's a lot quieter. There's less people. And then some more people come out, and some more people come out. And I often say it's like running on a treadmill. You know, you start off, you're easy, you might warm up, and then you slowly build it up. If you jump on the treadmill when it's already at full speed, you often will fall flat on your face, or it's just too much going on. And that's like going out your hotel, like open the door and going out at like 10 o'clock in the morning when it's already super busy, versus going out earlier and just let things build up and let the day come to you. And often like a lot of my best shots come, and I've seen it with other people, come from that part of the day. So that's one of the things we do, is we do start early. There's quite a lot of theory on the first couple of days, a lot of shooting. Then it's really about letting people kind of go off and shoot more of what they're interested in. And then I help, like, kind of would do lots of critiques and help guide them in those areas that they're finding more interesting. But that's the street photography side of things. I pick these countries because they're just fascinating places, really lovely people. And street photography is such an amazing way to explore these places in more depth. It teaches you to see so much more, but also it's a great way to connect with people. I've had so many amazing conversations with people where the camera has been the icebreaker. They ask about that and you start talking. I mean, even in India, yeah, we got invited into people's homes for tea, just these amazing conversations. I've had, and in every country I go to, I have these conversations. I remember once in Cuba, I was going to do a whole street photography morning, and I met this guy right at the beginning. And then I went over and spent 3 hours in his house over some really strong coffee, just talking about what it was like life in communism. It was fascinating. So it's a great way to connect with people. And also, like, even just like things like finding the best restaurants or food and everything. So it's a very kind of full on. I always get a guest speaker, so someone local street photographer. So we're in Hanoi, got this guy Ha, who's arguably the best street photographer in Vietnam. He's a Fuji X ambassador. And he came and gave this amazing, street photography presentation to us during it as well. So it's really full on. I'm also aware I've gone rambling. What was the question?
Yeah, let me take you back to the three avatars. So one was the retiree who's got money, wants to travel.
Yes.
And who are the other two avatars?
Yeah, sorry, audience segmentation. So yes. So one is that's kind of the more the existing market. But I also see street photography, something like so many more people can benefit from it. And like my wedding photography has massively benefited from it. So the wedding photographer audience was also another segmentation of my audience. I also have, connections in that. So that was another one I've done quite a few podcast interviews in that kind of area. And that's actually helped a lot. A lot of people in my first workshops heard me on the podcast and then signed up and came along to join one. And then the other one I've got is, it's kind of people in who work in the kind of in commercial sector, late 20s and into their 30s, people who go in and kind of want to focus on, just earning as much money. Sometimes they're like, they want to have an early retirement. Often these people aren't tied down in relationships, but they do get holiday time and they want experiences and they sometimes buy fancy cameras. And so that's kind of another audience type for me. And just as going back one moment, is within the retiree space, I have that kind of splits into two for me. It's people who are already going on these kind of street photography workshops, but also there's a lot out there that don't know about it. And even like some of the people I had on my workshop in Hanoi were people who had done other types of photography workshops, but not street before. So I've kind of got three main segments and one gets split into two. But identifying those segments has been so key, because that allows me, whenever I'm writing content on my website or social, I'm thinking of those different segments, how to talk to them. But in my marketing, so one thing that's been really actually useful for me has been Instagram marketing. And in Instagram ads, you can really break down the audience. You can be like really specific in how you target people from, their location, age, interests, how often they travel. Are they regular travelers, or have they gone international last 6 months, which has been, really useful one for me, type of industries they work in, that like last segment I mentioned, that's really useful for that. Even their relationship statuses. So if you're thinking of people like you're doing a business that's more targetable couples, I mean, for wedding photography businesses, in the relationship element, you can say like people have been engaged in the last 3 months. Like that's a target you can target. So like if you're ever doing Instagram ads, make sure you are ticking that if you're a wedding photographer. And it also allows you like placement. Where are these ads going to appear? One advice I give with Instagram ads is don't trust Instagram's advice, or effectively Meta's advice, because their goal is to get more money from you, not exactly make your money go furthest. And so I always like, they can give good advice. A lot of times they don't like, so I will say like where you want your ads to be placed. If you're going to do a post, don't have those going stories, do a different thing for stories or different thing for reels. But yeah, Instagram ads have been really useful for me, and knowing those audiences has really helped with that.
So you're treating this as a 100% separate business. It has to generate its own income. You're only putting money into the business that is generated from the business, or are you taking money from your savings or your wedding photography business to grow the street photography business?
Initially, yes, that last bit. I think, you know, if you start, any business needs money to start. And if you, you know, most photography businesses, especially if you've already got the camera gear, has relatively low costs. But any new business needs investment. And so, yeah, I did initially, I took money from a wedding photography business. And so far, as mentioned at the beginning, that I am running it within my wedding photography business. So Street with Matt is run currently under my Matt Bannett wedding photography company. That just adds simplicity, that I don't have to set up a load of new bank accounts yet and costs, and it all just runs together. But I will move that part. But yeah, I have put money into it. So I have put money into Instagram ads, probably being the main cost. And then just a lot of time in, you know, building the website. I do a lot of talks. I've done like online talks with different like membership groups. Well, Anna Puma, who we're with in India, and I know spoken on this podcast, who's a fantastic wedding photographer. She has like a membership group where she helps with kind of branding. I mean, she's really good with that. And so, yeah, I did a talk, like an online talk, live online talk with her community. I've done physical talks with camera clubs. I mean, actually, on the way back from Asia, I got invited to do a presentation in Kuala Lumpur, which is really, really cool, with the street photography community there. But a lot of it is, yes, outreach is getting out there. And yeah, Instagram ads has been useful. I've also, just going to go back a sec, there's a key difference between my street photography business and my wedding business that I was aware of coming in. And that was that the wedding photography business, I was entering into an existing market. So people are already out there searching for wedding photographers. They know what they want. They're looking for them. So for me, the main goal is to get there in front of them and effectively compete with the existing market. With my street photography business, there is a small market, but my goal is to reach out. My target audience, most of my target audience, are people who don't really, haven't thought about doing street photography or haven't thought about doing a street photography workshop, which means my goal is actually, it's more challenging, because now not only do I need to sell people on me, but first I need to sell them on the idea of doing this thing that they weren't searching for, and then to do it with me. And this is the one of the reasons that I focus more on Instagram, which I don't do with weddings, because in the wedding market, people are looking for you. Google's great, because people are searching for you, you can be found. If people aren't searching for you, Google's not going to work as well. Well, it's not going to really work much at all. And that's why I've kind of used Instagram a lot. But also from my corporate days, I was familiar with some of these like marketing strategies out there. And one of them is what it's called. It's called, I think it's the rule of seven. And it's a marketing idea that's been around from like the 1930s. I think it was initially movie studios that first came up with it. But it was the idea that for a new product, you need to be seen by someone like seven times in different places before they like consider a purchase. And so for me, that's very much been a strategy of being, when especially targeting the wedding kind of world, is being on like, yeah, being interviewed on podcasts, Instagram ads to those people. Whenever people did come on my workshops, I'd often do like a few videos and I put those, upload those in Instagram story, and then they would share them. And sure enough, I heard people in these workshops saying, oh yeah, you know, I heard you on the podcast and I saw an ad and then I saw my friends were doing it and I'm like, oh, I need to do this. And so that for me was a very different strategy coming in than my wedding photography business.
Is that why you haven't focused on SEO so much, or are you doing SEO as well for the street photography?
Yes, it's more, so I came in with kind of like short-term audience goals and longer-term. Because the other thing, another kind of thing in the marketing world is you have the, what's it, the different, I think it's like five different adopter categories for new products. So you have people who call, I think it's the first one is innovators. So these are people who will just go, you hear a new product, go straight in, don't need much information. Then you have like early adopters, which are people are enthusiastic about like the idea. And again, don't need too much information to do it. And then you kind of get like late majority and like laggards who are really far behind. But the idea, these different people need different levels of information. So for the first two groups of people, you can just have a page, really basic, not much information. They hear about you once on a podcast interview and they come and sign up. And actually, that was my experience with some of those early workshops. The later people need a lot more convincing. They need reviews. They need to see other people doing it. They see photo examples. They need a page with lots of information. They need to know about you, you know, a good about page. They need to see reviews in different, yeah, different places. And so at the beginning, I was targeting these first two groups. So SEO was not really part of that. And my website was more simplistic. This year, I'm now moving towards my mid and longer term goals, which will involve SEO and will involve like a more in-depth website as well. There's going to be some like videos, video interviews with me. I'm going to use some of the content that I've been capturing for the first few workshops to bring that in to then target those other groups, because often those other groups are also like the bigger groups, there's more people in them. Again, these things are useful to be aware of to apply for your business so that when you go in, you have a really good strategy, because we're all busy. If you're already running another business, your time is limited. So these things, these kind of things that work for the big companies also work really well for the small companies as well, like one person businesses.
Got it. So do you then have a page? Because, you know, you talked about objections earlier and answering those questions or objections that people might have. Because I imagine that one of the biggest objections to a street photography workshop is, I can just go and book a trip to Hanoi myself. I can just walk out there on the street with my camera. Like, why should I come into a workshop and pay you to do it? Like, is that something you answer like as a full page or a blog post or just in your Q&As?
It's pretty much across everything, because it is. It's the why. Why should I do this? Why should I do this with you? Why shouldn't I do this myself? And obviously there's a lot of people out there, like people like me, I wouldn't typically have done. There's some people I do want to do workshops with, but people have time to plan their own trips. People already know loads of stuff about SEO. People are good at planning trips. I'm like, yeah, don't waste your money on me. But you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't have the time. Those groups I mentioned are all pretty busy. And there's also people that aren't as like, I can find these places that I only do workshops in places that I've been to. I work with local people to find the best local restaurants, the best places to shoot, that, you know, that takes a huge amount of time to do and organize. So like, yeah, if you've got weeks to do that, you can do that. But if you don't, if your time's limited, I've done that for you. And then there's a street component. So I've really always been into education. I'm very British in the way I don't like saying nice things about myself, but I have a lot of people telling me I'm a really good teacher. And I put a lot of thought into that, put a lot of structure into how I organize things and how I set things up and the order we do things in, so people learn the best. And actually this one I just did in Vietnam, the guy who was a local guy, he very kindly offered to critique some of the work that our students had done, my attendees had done this workshop. And most of them hadn't done street photography before. And he said to me, he was really surprised. He was not expecting them to be that good at what they created by the end of the week. And so that's the other element. So I'd be like, yeah, if you're already amazing at street photography and you've got loads of time planning these trips, you're really good at it, then no, don't waste your money on me. But if you don't fit those boxes, that's where, yeah, I come in, and that's where I add the value. And to answer your question, that has to come across everything from my social media, my website. It's all about why do this for me, not for me.
So you're quite comfortable with the fact that this isn't for everyone. Just like the photographer listening, what they do isn't for everyone. You have to isolate who you're targeting and go after that client.
100%. I think that's so important. And in any business, because if you're trying to make yourself for everyone, you're going to be kind of like third, fifth, 10th choice, or, you know, for those people, you're not going to get the business. I very much apply this to my wedding photography business as well. I was like, you know, what's that phrase? The riches are in the niches or something. But I really went niche because I realized, you know, especially in an industry like the wedding industry, my goal, you know, I want like 30 wedding bookings a year. If I get 30 people and I'm their number one choice, I'm fully booked. If I have 1,000 people and I'm their fifth choice, I can end up with no weddings. So I really think it's just as much knowing who you're for and who you're not. And in weddings, I turned down couples who weren't a good fit. You know, it's nice. I would say, look, actually, I think, you know, after we've spoken, I have a friend who does this, go look at his website. I feel that might be a better fit for you. Let me know. And, you know, it was. But yeah, I think that is important to do that. And I think in your marketing, try and hone it in for those people, because then that's, and it, you know, depends a bit on your business model. But while I'm talking about street photography, my wedding photography business, I really want to lock into exactly the person who this is for. So when they're sitting there, they're like, this is for me, I'm going to book. And there's going to be loads of people that's not the right fit for, but that's actually fine. And especially for a week-long workshop, it's probably best that they've found that out on my website, because otherwise that's going to make my job harder. It's going to affect their experience and other people's experience as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mate, I know we're running out of time. I want to finish on a positive note, but I still want to ask you like a couple of negatives. Like, first of all, with the imposter syndrome, did you have anyone telling you, Matt, this is crazy, don't do it, or even in your own head saying, don't do it, you know, why am I putting myself out here? Did you face that, and how did you overcome it, if you did?
Definitely. I faced it with both businesses. So when I was setting up my wedding photography business, I was working for a consultancy in London in the corporate world, and they all were like, why are you doing, why you got this good, secure job, why are you doing this, throwing this way, well paid to go take photos and try something that you have little experience in? And it nearly made me not do it. But I've always kind of trusted my gut, and my gut was overwhelming, telling me to do this. And I'd done my research. I'd done my, you know, I didn't just jump into it. And yeah, and I'm so glad I did. But what's so interesting with that is, as soon as I stepped out of that bubble, and I went, and there was actually Nine Dots had just started that year, and I went to their workshop, a wedding photographer's. It was the first time I actually met some other wedding photographers face to face, and it was completely the opposite thing. It's like, oh, well done, yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, you'd be so careful of echo chambers. You know, the people I work with, really smart, but they were in an echo chamber, and it was not for me. So that was kind of just trusting my gut and going for it and taking risks. And then, yeah, with the street photography business, I kind of didn't tell many people. I've been planning it for like almost like Indian stuff, with our trip in India was a spark for it. And I've been doing it, like putting it together the last 5 years. I initially was looking to launch it in 2020, but then stuff happened that made that not an ideal time. And I feel like the people I did share it with were positive and supporting, but I know if I had put it out there, a lot of people would have said the exact same thing they did before. So as far as advice is, I think it's just mainly be aware of who you talk to about it, who, you know, people you trust, people who, yeah, share the same values as you do, I think is really important. And just, you know, do the work, you know, do the prep, research, compare to market, have an idea, do talk to people to challenge that idea as well, to hone it in, and then, yeah, go for it.
Nice. Have you ever had someone on one of your workshops, you know, leave a negative review, give you, like, tell you, Matt, you know, I just didn't get what I thought I was going to get out of this. I'm looking for a time or a someone, something where it hasn't just been all roses, because it sounds pretty amazing so far.
I'm going to share one negative. I haven't had any negative reviews. I also ask for feedback after every workshop. No one gives it, but, and in that, some, it's more like there'll be little things to hone out, but I think feedback is so valuable, especially early stage of business. But their reviews were really positive. It was just the testimonials were really positive. They had a few little bits of feedback sometimes. But I know that for me, it's all about setting expectations. So I really try and set expectations on my website, everywhere, even if that means that's going to put people off. So that if that does come along and someone's unhappy, I'm like, well, you know, first I ask myself, did I set expectation? Was I clear on that? And if I was, you know, sometimes people don't read stuff, sometimes you don't engage with it. That's okay. I have had some of the workshops, as I mentioned, I push people hard. And some of the stuff I start with on the first day can be kind of boring. I kind of like take it down to a level to basically train in some of the boring basics so then people can better see. And by the end, they all see it. But I do have at the beginning of the days, on the first day, people almost being like, oh, this is kind of boring. Is this going to be the whole week? And I do say things, you know, that prepare it and say this, but I can still see people frustrated. And it's hard because I want people to have a good time. But I'm like, no, I know. And I try and tell myself, no, I know they're going to, by the end of this, be happy. And so I do that. I have thought scenarios where I might have people on the workshops that can be difficult, that could be, I mean, they could be racist. They could have, you know, not treat people with respect. For me, treating people with respect both on the workshop and in the world around us is so important. I even have that in my terms and conditions, that if you don't do this, you will be removed from the workshop. So I do have that in there. And if people did act that way, I would kick them off the workshop. I would refund them for the time they haven't had. But I would do that because for me, the way we treat people around is really important, but also the experience that everyone else on the workshop has is important. And if there's someone taken away from that, you know, I think that's my responsibility. So touch wood, I haven't had that yet. I overthink things all the time. So I have planned for those eventualities, and those are the steps I'm willing to take in those scenarios if that was to come about.
Yeah. I can imagine too. I mean, it's almost like it's like a holiday. You're going to explore a new place. You're going to take photos. Like, it's a fun thing to do. Like, it's going to be pretty hard to have anything to gripe about on one of these trips. I mean, having done that, some of that stuff myself, I know how amazing it is.
Yeah.
Mate, where is the best place for the listener to see examples of your wedding work and your street photography work?
Yeah, I mean, my wedding website, which is getting updated in the next few months, is Matt Badnott Photography. That's my wedding stuff. And then my street stuff, I have a website, just Street with Matt. And then I also have a Instagram account that I'm quite active on. And I've just come back from amazing trip. I had the Vietnam workshop, but then also went to Japan, which was scouting out a new workshop for next March, which is going to be in Tokyo and Kyoto, which amazing. And I've always wanted to go to Japan. It's such a fascinating place, and it's such a cool place to explore the street. All that work's going to go onto my Instagram in the coming weeks. But yeah, those are the kind of places to find me. And if you have any questions about street or stuff, or even I know other resources, like I love being inspired by other people and finding other things, just feel free to drop me a message. Always happy to share and chat about.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. That is so good. Look, I'll add links to where people can find your website and social media profiles that's going to accompany this audio. So I'll have links to all those. With your three types of target audience or your three avatars, are they all UK based, or are people coming from around the world to meet you in Japan or meet you in Hanoi?
Oh, it's global. For the Hanoi one, we had UK with Germany, South Africa, and America.
Oh, wow.
So it very much. I mean, actually, Carla, who was in India, she came along, but she was the only one I knew previously. Like everyone else was people I'd never met, didn't know before. And so yeah, the UK ones are more like the 1 day ones around the UK are more that's UK based. But yeah, the 3 day ones in Europe and the week 1 week ones, obviously, it's just everyone. And that's been so nice. Like, it's one of the experiences from India that we really enjoyed is not just seeing everything and doing street, but it was hanging out with a really cool mix of people that share this passion and the conversations we had. And that's something I love about these workshops as well, is just we get such an interesting mix of people, different ages, from different backgrounds, and it just leads to really fascinating, conversations and a lot of fun.
So good. And for the listener, I recorded an episode, I'll link to it in the show notes, with everyone that was on the India trip. Remember, we recorded on the rooftop in India. I think it was in Jodhpur, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll link to that in the show notes. Matt, I've got two quick questions to finish off with. One is, you mentioned you do all the bookings for hotels and accommodation. Is anyone going to be stuck in a bed like I was stuck in India?
Oh, that was amazing. That was like, yeah, that was Anna booked that place. She did all the books. She did great.
Can you paint the picture for the listener?
Yeah. So we arrive in Kolkata, and it's a homestay, and we go in, and pretty much all of us are in this one room. So there's a collection of different size beds and stuff, but we suddenly count them out and realize that, wait, we're missing a bed. And then we look down, and literally just behind the door on the floor, there's a little bed that almost looks like a dog bed. That it's kind of like a meter log or something. And I don't know how it came about, but Andrew was a complete hero and volunteered. And I could picture it now. We're like in bed and just looking over, you're reading in this little bed, and it was adorable. But absolute hero. I do have to make one little caveat though. I don't book people's hotels, and I give some recommendations. And the reason is people have completely different budgets when it comes to hotels. I've been turned off trips I want to go on because they were putting like $2,000 down for hotels for a week, and I'm like, well, I can't afford that. So I give recommendations on like a budget and a higher end near us. But we're always in places with loads of Airbnb. Booking.com, I always say this is where the theory for the workshop is going to be in easy access of this, but please meet what your budget is, what your comfort level is. That's the reason I don't book hotels. Everything else I take care of, but I don't do hotels for that reason.
Right. So with so where do you do the theory? Is that in your hotel?
Yeah, I mean, typically I do Airbnb for that reason, because we have a few theory and critique sessions during the week where you need a space, and I don't want to put like five people on my bed in front of the TV and stuff. So I do normally it's Airbnb. I look, there's different options, but typically it's an Airbnb with kind of like a living room space that we can fit in, because the workshop's always limited to five people to kind of maximize the value for everyone, and they're like kind of the one-to-one, and it has worked quite well in that group. And so, yeah, I find like an Airbnb or something that we can do those theory elements in.
Got it. And then you book the restaurants. So are the meals included with the workshops, or do I pay for my own meal?
Yeah, you pay for your own meals, because we don't have all meals together. There's always the option to, but some people do want a bit of space. And then, yeah, some people do want to go off and do just some a few different things. So I don't book the restaurant. I book or I arrange, where we're going to go. A lot of times very local, so I don't take bookings, but we find like just really incredible places, just like really mix of experiences. And yeah, the only thing included is the education and the whole, like, the plan for the week. So people are responsible for their own flights, visas. I always give checklists of what people need to do, their own accommodation. And then we just typically split the meals across, yeah, what people are having.
I love it. Okay, so this is sounding more and more relaxed and more like it's a proper holiday where you go and learn and shoot as well.
Yeah, this is the thing. So, like, it's intensive and immersive. Those are the two words I use, intensive and immersive. I said, don't come with a partner unless they're coming on the workshop. You're not going to see them. You're going to be knackered. Like, okay. This is full on. We're going to be out shooting, but it's going to be really immersive. A bit like we did in India. We're going to go out and you're going to have, like, all round experience from learning street, experiencing street, meeting people. I introduce you to local, like, street photographers as well. So you get their perspective. I take you these amazing, like, local cafes, bars, restaurants, and it's just going to be really immersive. So I want you to come out, great photos, loving street photography, loving that country, big respect for that country too, and just, like, a lust for life.
Love it. All right, mate. Last question. What camera do I bring? Does it have to be a Leica?
Oh, no. I do not understand those things. I shoot Sony, but that's mainly because I like it for weddings. If I was just shooting street, I'm never going to be a Sony ambassador, it's fine. I would actually shoot Fuji. I love the Fujis for street. I always recommend people primes over, you know, zoom lenses, because there's so much going on. Limit your gear so that it doesn't take up so much of your mind and you can just focus on what's going on. And lens wise, I normally recommend a 35mm, that's full frame. So on a Fuji crop frame, it'd be 23. I find that works really well. A 28mm full frame is also really good, but it does mean you have to get closer. You have to be more about your background. So people starting out, I recommend normally a 35mm. But I'm, you know, a great photo is not about the gear. So it's just the gear. You don't want it to limit you or hold you back. So there is a lot of personal choice in there.
But you don't have to buy a new camera to come and do it. If you're a wedding photographer and you want to get better at documentary type work, then you could come and do this with whatever you use for your weddings.
Oh, exactly. I mean, to be honest, you could probably do it with a mobile phone camera. I would normally not recommend that because it's certain types, it's going to be more limiting. But yeah, any camera you can use. I do recommend digital over film because digital just allows you to play and experiment some more. I've only got 38 photos and it's really expensive to get new film. It also means that I can critique and we can have group critiques and stuff, which is such an amazing educational, you know, learning. We used to share cameras when we were in India and look what other people have done. And it was just so interesting to see how different people see the same place. And I actually recommend people do not get a new camera before coming out, because if you're trying to learn how to use a new camera and learn all these other things, you're just giving yourself a much bigger, like, hurdle that no one else is dealing with. So always when you come out, doesn't matter what camera, but make sure you are comfortable with it so that you can maximize the experience and you're not spending loads of time like messing around with settings.
Love it. Sorry, Matt, I've got to ask you one more thing.
Go for it.
If I want to focus more on portraits, like, can I do that at one of your workshops? Or are you going to say, Andrew, you know how to shoot portraits, go and shoot something else?
No. What I would say is for the first 2 days, they're mostly theory. I would say, focus on this, learn this. But for the rest of it, definitely, I'm not going to teach how to do portraits. I say that if anyone comes up to me and wants to do, yeah, like something like a bit portraits, like street portraiture is really cool. It's different. Street photography has to be candid. You know, that's where the magic is in it. But, you know, street portraiture is, I think, it's a really cool thing. And if people do want to do that, I will give them some tips. It's not something I'm going to properly teach to the group because that's not what the workshop's about. But yeah, definitely. I'll offer some advice on that and ways, you know, you can shoot that and ways to approach people and connect people. So I think that can be really, really cool as well.
Unreal. Matt, I've kept you way over time. Massive thanks for coming on. So good to catch up. So good to see a smiling face. I was going to ask you about being an introvert. I'm going to save that for the next time I have you on because there's no way you come across as an introvert. Mate, massive thanks again.
No, man, it's my pleasure. It's been so nice seeing you again. I just so many memories of like India and like past times coming through. I'm also like, I'm really honored, man. Like having listened to your podcast so much in the past, it's surreal to be on here.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Matt as much as I did. Matt, if you are listening again, mate, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing everything you did. I was as interested in the SEO and business side of the wedding photography business as much as the street photography. And like I said earlier, massive congrats on both sides of your business. I'm looking forward to following along, and I really do hope, and I mean this, that I get to join you on one of your street photography trips somewhere, because it's so much fun shooting in the street. It's a great way to get the creative juices flowing, meet other like-minded photographers, and just have fun with our work instead of doing it purely for business. So, yeah, mate, again, massive congrats. Looking forward to catching up in the future, and thanks again. For you, the listener, I do hope you got a ton from what Matt had to share. I hope you enjoyed this deviation from the usual kind of interview that I'm doing, and I hope you were okay with me indulging myself by having Matt on the podcast. As you heard, look, I was enthusiastic about the street photography stuff. I love it. It's no secret. And it was really good fun to connect and get Matt on the show. So again, hope you got a ton from the episode and the interview as well, especially so if you are a premium member and got to hear the first half of the interview with Matt when he talked about generating or bringing in more wedding photography clients. If you would like to see more from Matt, connect with Matt, see about his workshops, check out his wedding photography work, I've got links to anything and everything that he mentioned in the show notes for today's episode. And this week they're at photobizx.com/564. I've got links to anything and everything that Matt mentioned. I've got examples of his fantastic work. It's all there in that one spot. I'll be adding Matt into the members Facebook group as well. So if you are a premium member and you do have a follow-up question you want to put to Matt, you can do that there. And of course, you can reach out to Matt via social media or email as well.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
In other news or announcements for this week, there's a really cool free video training series for photographers related to business this week. Like I said, it's free. It's been put together by Shelby White of Shelby Lee Photography. I was able to present something for this as well. You'll see a lot of familiar names there like John Glazer, Brianna Schrader, Joel Dunn, Kim Marie, and probably a lot of other names that you may be familiar with. Each of us shared something to help you grow your business. And like I said, this is a free video training series. If you want to learn more about it or go and check out those videos, I think they're being released once a day over the next couple of weeks. You can go to photobizx.com/Shelby, and I've got links in the show notes as well. Oh, and just to be clear, it's a 14-day masterclass series where each of the presenters covers a separate or different topic. And again, it's 100% free. So photobizx.com/Shelby to learn more details about that. And lastly, a heads up that the upcoming AI-powered marketing for photographers masterclass with Brianna Schrader is coming up. This is part two of the training with Brianna. So if you've registered for all four parts of this series, I'll get you an email with details about that. If you don't know about this, I've got details in the show notes, or you can go to photobizx.com/AI2. That's photobizx.com/AI2 to get more details about what we'll be covering, when it is, all those details. But I can tell you Brianna's going to be sharing details on utilizing AI for creating your lead magnets, for copywriting, and for your newsletter creation. That's all going to be covered in this part two of this series. Now, you don't have to have done part one to do part two. The idea is that these are standalone classes. You can register for the parts that are relevant to you and your business, or the parts that you want to learn or have someone learn in your studio. The cost of the training will be $197. It'll double after the live training. You'll get access to the standalone course like you always do with the PhotoBizX courses. And there is a special bonus if you do register before the live training, where you can get $100 off any other existing training offered by me at PhotoBizX. So if you are looking to create high converting lead magnets, or you want to create new copy for your website, for your emails or newsletters, come along and take this training with Brianna, because she's going to show you how to utilize AI to make it so, so much easier for you and give you absolutely no excuse to not be creating high converting and great copy for your potential clients. Again, there are more details about that over at photobizx.com/AI2. Alrighty, that is just about going to wrap up this episode of the podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode with Matt. Big thanks to him for coming on, sharing everything he did. It is pouring with rain here. It has been all week. The rest of this week is looking absolutely miserable as well. The good news is the Giro d'Italia is back on. That's the big stage race. It's a cycling stage race, I should say, just like the Tour de France, but it's held in Italy, which means it is super late nights for me if I do want to watch the full stages. But generally, I watch half in the evening, get up in the morning early and watch the second half for the finish of the race. So at least I've got that while the weather is absolutely horrendous. But I am hoping to get out on my bike and do some training this week. But the plan for today is get this edited and out to you. Then it's off to the dentist, something I'm not looking forward to. The gym, don't mind that so much. And then it's back into the local soccer club's photos for this year's soccer photos of every child and coach and manager of the club, which is absolutely massive. So this is a big, big time of year for us, especially for Linda. She does a lot of the coordinating for this. We bring in an associate shooter to help with the shooting. But yeah, it's a lot of behind the scenes, a lot of coordinating to make things run smoothly. So yeah, it's a busy time of year. That is enough rambling from me. I hope wherever you are in the world, you are safe, healthy, and well. Hope business is thriving, and I will be back next week with another episode for you. Until then, have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.